Pivot Masters podcast. I am your host, Ashley Ranasingha, and I'm excited to share this week's Pivot Master interview with you. I get to speak with Sean Nguyen. Sean is a friend of mine. We met years ago through a mutual friend, Martin. Hey, Martin. Thanks for introducing me to Sean. He's awesome. So Sean is going to share a really cool story. He has done a lot of things from PI, bouncer. He works in security kind of roles for a while, then moves over to regional management of comic book stores and now owns his own business. It's a really interesting story, and he's bounced around quite a bit. I love his story because he really has this continual thread of interest in human nature. And that's what really brings together these different industries for him. And I find that just really incredible and really fascinating. And I also just love that he dove into kind of the nerd culture headfirst and has really embraced it since moving to Portland. The moving is a big part of his pivot experience, and he'll kind of get into that throughout the story. So without further ado, we're going to just jump right in because I'm excited to share this story with you, and I'm certain you're eager to hear Sean talk about his journey. Enjoy. All right, Sean, so if you could, please share a summary of your career so far.
Okay, well, to begin, if I'm going to summarize my career, I also have to include a bit of life change, because with career change came a location change. As you know, I am born and bred Chicagoan, 30 years. And now reside in Portland. And so that actually prompted my career path, per se. In Chicago, I had a very corporate background. Lots of office management, several years at Pitney Bowes Management Services, where I was contracted by Bell Boyd and Lloyd, Mayor Brown, PricewaterhouseCoopers, things of that nature. But I also dabbled in a bit of customer service, but a main focus on business related to customer service. But when that became too much for me in Chicago and the Chicago lifestyle, being sick of snow up to my knees, I decided to give another city and another state a chance. And so with my research done, I landed on Portland. And so that's where I've been since 2011. And I moved here without a job, without a career in mind, and really no plans, just enough money saved up to sustain myself. And then just in my travels around town to discover the city, I found out that this was the nerdiest city in the United States. And basically what happened was, through mingling, I ended up developing a new career in the nerd industry, starting my work at Things from Another World, which is a comic retailer chain that is the sister company of Dark Horse Publishing. I started as a store clerk there on purpose, just to kind of learn the business, tricks of the trade. And in my years career there, worked myself up to marketing, vendor relations, purchasing, and becoming the regional manager of all the stores in the area, and then even started consulting on the Dark Horse side for editorial. And so basically my whole career became being a professional nerd. And I never thought that that was even a possibility. I mean, as a fan of this industry, I didn't think that I would work in, and it had never crossed my mind that, you know, this was a money making industry, which, you know, it's kind of obvious now. But that is my career in a nutshell, because today, that whole transition from corporate background to professional nerd, I now own my own company, Strange Solutions Marketing and Consulting, with a focus on pop culture related business. And that is what I'm doing today. So 10 years at TFA Dark Horse led me to marketing consulting today for comic book writers, artists, or anybody who has some sort of nerdy business that they need to put a focus into learning how to make money or selling their product properly. And that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at now. And it's fun. It's stressful, but it's also fun because I get to earn a living being surrounded by the things that I love.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as you say that, I have the good fortune of seeing you right now, and you are literally surrounded by the things that you love.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, just to quickly describe, I'm kind of, I see Sean, and is that a display case behind you?
Yeah, there's a display case full of action figures, and there's a little bit of art on the wall, comic art, and then
yeah.
To the right of me is a toy crafting area. And
awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're kind of living the nerd dream, right?
You know, yes. I was actually,
or at
just,
least yours.
Yes, at least mine. I am satisfied and sustained. You know, I make enough money to not just survive, but to thrive a bit in this tough climate. And I know that I'm fortunate and lucky. I spent 10 years building up a network so that I could do this through retail, through purchasing, through editorial, things like that. I just kind of dabbled in it all, collected the knowledge that I need, so now that I can do this on my own. And then, to be honest, like, even with all of the expertise that I do have, I don't know everything, and I don't even want to. So what I did when starting this company was recruit several people that I knew had the skills that I did not possess. My only real skill is that I'm good at leadership. and that,
I mean, yeah. just what you said right there is an example of leadership, is recognizing where you need the support and who can provide that for you, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah, honestly, I'm very upfront with my clients about that. While I'm the owner or founder of the company, I am their client contact, and that's it. When it comes to some of the management or business management side of the business, or social media, or PR, I went out and built a team for just those purposes. Like, so I have a social media coordinator because I'm not the best at it. So
I hear you. Sean, that kind of actually reminds me what you said just a little bit ago. Reminds me of that Socrates, the only thing I know is I know nothing at all.
Yes. Right? Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a sign of wisdom. It's a beautiful thing to get to that point in your life where you're like, it's okay.
And honestly, it's surreal when you come to realize it, when you accept it too.
Yeah.
Wanting to be like the masters of every realm, or just, you know, be in control of all things, one for safety and, you know, one for ego, maybe. But I think when I had that realization that I don't have to be the know-all, it was a great break. Yeah. And I could relax, and then I could have fun again.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, that's a sense of freedom. That's beautiful. I want to rewind a little bit and talk about, you know, your time in the snowpocalypse land of Chicago.
Yes.
So I know that you gave us a little summary there of your career, but I know there are other jobs kind of squirreled away in your time. Do you want to get into them, or do you want to kind of
leave those things? I'll gladly get into them, because when I tell people my full career path or jobs in the past, it sounds so fictional. So to begin, like... I would say, I don't mean like I started a job and then I hated it and I quit and I just went to another one. Each one of these that I'm going to list, I worked at for a couple of years, and sometimes simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So I have been a bouncer for a whole chain of bars. I have been a party planner and promoter. Same company, doing that at the same time. I have also been a loss prevention detective for,
Okay, what is that?
Okay, so that is, a fancy title for security in like retail establishments. But okay. It also works in some of the IT community or, some of the business establishment, because loss prevention can be anything from preventing people from stealing your products to protecting identities. Or, you know, information.
Sure. And so, intellectual property or... Yeah.
Exactly. And so I did this for TJ Maxx, of all stores. TJ Maxx, and there's a store called Filene's Basement in Chicago that I did this for. Now, first, let me explain. The TJ Maxx that I worked for in Chicago was downtown Chicago and was two floors right in the middle of the busiest area in Chicago. So it wasn't like a suburban TJ Maxx regular shopping experience. This was high volume, high traffic, high theft.
Right.
And so what loss prevention detective does is monitor the cameras in the store to look for obvious signs of theft.
Okay.
And not just somebody taking things and putting them in their bags. We were also looking for counterfeiting and pickpockets, because I had no idea until then, but that is still a huge thing.
Whoa.
Yeah. and so we are plain clothes. We pretend to be shoppers ourselves, monitor the floor. And honestly, it sounds ridiculous, but that was one of the most exciting jobs I've ever had, because with the rules of loss prevention, you are not allowed to apprehend someone until they physically leave the location with your goods. So that means I had to watch them from start to finish, attain the product, attempt to conceal it, and then leave the store with it. And only then can you arrest somebody. Otherwise, you're breaking the law. So...
Right.
That means on most days that I would be in my office staring at the camera from several different angles, controlling it, following them, and waiting for them to reach the escalator before I left the office, flew through the store, and beat them to actually escaping outside so that I can handcuff them and then put them into our secure hold.
I do have a question, though.
Yeah.
So when you're doing this, I gotta be honest, I would be so bored watching people shop, dude. I'd fall asleep, I think.
You know, I definitely felt like that at times, but consider it this way. This is also be a case study on human behavior. Because when you're taught the signs of what a person looks like when they're about to steal, it's super interesting. Because now you're getting into the psychology and body language. And so watching that, I think gave me more insight into people. A lot of people think that I am empathic in a lot of ways. And I feel that I am. But I also feel that a lot of this was from studying human behavior. And not just in the theft aspect, but just in other realms too. But it's interesting when you start to see the obvious signs. And it's crazy too, because one of the first things they teach you is that, you know, for obvious reasons, you cannot just single out any like sex, color, lifestyle, anything, because they tell you anybody could be capable of theft. Mm-hmm. And they were right. I didn't think they were at first, you know, because we're all, you know, ingrained our own biases. But like the first person that I ever caught on that job was an off-duty police officer stealing cologne.
Dude.
And not a regular cop either. This was a court-appointed cop for the like the courthouse down the street. You know, like the downtown courthouse.
He had a big meeting, Sean. Like, he really needed this cologne. Dang.
I couldn't believe it. And
is it the thrill, I wonder? Or probably. Yeah, I mean, I guess everyone has a different motive, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I would, if you don't mind, I'd like to share a story from that time. It's one of my favorite things
that
ever happened. On that job, I met Keanu Reeves.
No.
Yeah.
I hear he's awesome.
He was super awesome. And so here.
Wait, you didn't meet him because you were like cuffing him, right? Like,
No, he did not steal anything. No. Okay, he was actually, this was during the time he was filming Constantine, which was filmed in Chicago, and it was filmed right behind our store. And so he was on a break from the set and was outside smoking, and I was outside waiting to arrest someone. So I had my handcuffs ready and I was smoking a cigarette too, and I'm standing there and I look over and I'm like, yeah, that's Keanu Reeves. And so I walk over and I say, hey man, how's it going? You know, we have a conversation, and in the middle of our little talk, my walkie-talkie goes off and my partner says, okay, they're coming out. So I go, excuse me, Mr. Reeves. And then I have to go back to the door where he then watches me arrest this person.
That's awesome.
And he like just wished me a good night. I was like, wow.
Wow.
That's
what a cool moment.
Yeah. He's really tall.
Wow.
You think I'm tall. He's really tall. Yeah. Yeah. I had to look up at him.
I believe it. I mean, I believe that he's tall. Wow, that's so cool. I just feel like he's one of those celebrities where you just hear all these positive things about. It would be actually cool to get to meet him, especially in a casual way like that, where he's not feeling bombarded or harassed by like paparazzi or anything.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely didn't want to bring attention to that. I was talking to him, you know.
Right. Okay, so I'm sorry, I got you a little off track. And we did kind of skirt over your time as a bouncer. Is there anything from that time that you want to share? Or are you just like, yeah, that was the thing, next?
You know, I did appreciate...
And party planner.
And party, yeah. I did appreciate my time as a bouncer. I love and hate it. Because obviously I get to meet a lot of cool people. And I had fun. But... those were the most violent times of my life, you know, because I was a bouncer at several sports related bars in Wrigleyville. And so right down the street from, you know, Wrigley Field, where people are obviously drunk all the time. And so I did a lot of fighting. One of the bars I worked at was a 2 a.m. bar. So that means that, no, I'm sorry, a 5 a.m. bar. That means that. Okay. When the other bars closed at 2 a.m., people would then, already drunk, come to the 5 a.m. bar for a few more hours of party time, which means that in the door, they're already messed up.
Right, right.
And so, yeah. And I'm not talking like, you know, honestly, I've been in those situations like, where you know when you see a movie and you see a bar fight?
Yeah.
I've seen that up close. Those are real.
No, thank you.
Yeah. I've actually had like knuckle drag out fights in the streets in front of the bar, like with groups of people just waiting for the cops to show up and so they can stop hurting other people in the public and things like that. And it's so I don't miss that part at all.
yeah, reasonable. So,
but yeah, I mean, I think that was a young man's game for me, you know, or a young person's game. Mm. that's not something I would ever return to. But I did do it for a long time, and I did do it while I had other jobs too. But yeah, the bouncer thing, loss prevention detective, that was actually pretty interesting. I thought about returning to that only because you do get to travel with that position too. Like, I remember having to go to New York for a stakeout.
No way.
Yeah. Basically because there was a theft ring just stealing high dollar and high volume items from this one store in Harlem. Or they were hitting like all these TJ Maxx's in New York, and we had to like sit in the car and like literally wait for this one to show up and track him, and then we had to follow the money. Like, it was intense. Like, it was like, this is what you do for retail?
Wow. I mean, do you ever watch like those TV shows or, you know, like cop TV shows, and you're like, yeah, I've been on a stakeout before. Like, you relate to the characters. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then honestly, one of the training sessions that we have to go through, or we had to go through, there were three layers of this interrogation training. And it's from I'm not going to say I got the same exact training, but it was the same company that provides the materials for federal agents. And so,
man, TJ Maxx is serious about their inventory.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, considering really that's just one of the stores that the larger company actually owns.
Right.
Yeah, it's the same company as Marshall's and several other stores. So they've got a lot of money to protect, I guess.
Yeah, they've invested.
Mm-hmm. But then I finally left that business. I did a bit of private investigating. Now, that is definitely boring because you don't really get to study psychology or human behavior, because you only get to witness one human behavior, and that is adultery. It's just it. That was like the whole job. And I honestly, I didn't enjoy it, and I got out of that as quickly as I could.
Yeah. That makes me think of, you know, like fortune tellers and stuff. They talk about how, you know, people could come in and ask about how to make millions or how to get rich or, you know, how to succeed in their careers. And all they talk about is their love life. Like,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. That's crazy. So, like, do you think it was just the company that you were working with that just attracted that clientele, or do you genuinely think that industry is just largely?
I think that industry, because I did talk to other PIs. And like, if you're not like a very advanced PI who's been in the game for a long time and who has like some sort of decent relationship with the police, or, you know,
clearance.
Right. You're not getting any great cases. You're getting like cheating cases or people trying to make false claims on insurance. That's it. It's not great. I don't recommend it.
So how long did you work in the PI industry?
About a year.
Yeah. Okay. So you got kind of bored with that one, and I'm imagining it's a little bit of a soul suck type situation.
Exactly.
So then what happens?
So, at that point, you know, I'm getting older, and I decide, well, maybe it's time for me to return back to some sort of office work. And that is when I applied for Pitney Bowes Management Services. And essentially what that is Pitney Bowes is a staff that will handle functions within other businesses that they don't want to do. Right.
Okay.
And so the first contract that I was assigned to was the law firm Bell, Boyd & Lloyd. And essentially what we did was we ran a print shop within the law firm. They have their own setup. Like, imagine a FedEx Kinko's inside a law firm.
Okay.
We ran that.
Yeah.
And you know, the whole purpose being because they have a lot of documents that they need filed, copied,
confidential stuff.
Prepared for court, presentations, you know, exhibits, things of that nature. And that's what we handled.
Wow.
And I did that for about a year and a half. Until I received a promotion and got moved to a higher contract at Mayor Brown. Mayor Brown is the largest law firm in Chicago. Again, I was running their like business center or print shop area, and I loved it. I was very good at this job. Just because I know how much presentation matters. And it's kind of my thing anyway. I like stuff to look pretty. I really do. and I knew how important these documents were. And this job also involved a lot of like back and forth to actual courthouses, you know, because of the rush nature of the business, last minute exhibits, add-ons. And it's the job itself just expanded in ways that I never thought that it would, because it went from a FedEx type environment to an actual office administration type position.
And you're still in Chicago. So yep. You're in the land of snow. You've done already at this point, you've done a number of things. Tell me. What's going on? Like, are we kind of near your time of transition to...
We're right there.
...the Pacific? We're right there. Okay, cool. Talk to me. Explain what's happening inside and outside of work that's making you want a big change.
So, at PricewaterhouseCoopers, I was appreciated. My team liked me. I was doing a great job. I was making more money. But, you know, I had to go to downtown Chicago every day and, you know, snow, rain, wind, whatever, which sucks in dress shoes, by the way.
yes.
But it got so monotonous.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever been in a position where you're like, you're good at something, but it's just so, it's not giving you any excitement?
No growth. Opportunities to challenge yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely wasn't feeling challenged. I got too good at it and it just became routine.
Right.
And so that's what was going on inside of work. Outside of work, I had started dating again and met a lovely young lady. Right.
Hey.
who is now my wife, by the way.
Mandy.
That's right. we met online at OkCupid.
Nice.
And, our first date was at the Museum of Science and Industry.
Awesome.
And we've just been running ever since. But like, she is not originally from the Midwest at all. And she was just like, you know, exploring Chicagoland. And it was never her intention to stay there. And when she mentioned that to me, the thought finally came in my head, well, why the hell am I still here? Like, I know what to expect from my Chicago life. Like, yeah, I've got a huge network here. I've got great friends. My family's here. But like, I started to feel like I was missing out on life. Like, there's a lot of other ways to live in other states and other countries. And so I started researching like where I should go or where I could go.
I mean, can I ask, like, at this time, are you thinking where can we go, or are you guys not quite there yet, or
not yet?
Just a solo trip.
Yep. It was just a solo trip. And then it just happened that our wants aligned. So once we did get there and started talking, she was like, yeah, I don't want to stay here either. So if you want to go somewhere, let's find some place to go together. And so we moved in with each other and got to know each other a little bit better. Still in Chicago, saved up some money, and then decided on Portland and threw away most of our stuff, sold some things, packed up what we had left and moved and drove across the country and came up here after, you know, securing an apartment.
Okay, so Portland. So you guys decided it's time to roll out to Portland. I've done some same thing. I kind of just showed up with enough savings, yep. Like just enough. And then, you know, you just hit the ground like, yo, got to get a job. So
eventually,
what happened?
I think I've always been a person that doesn't I don't know how to relax or chill and sit still for too long. Like my first month and a half in Portland, I really I enjoyed this part of it. I found out that Portland has a series of libraries that all stock comics regularly. So I would put on my headphones and get on a bus and go down to the library and just hang out and read comic books like all day or check out a bunch of books or whatever because I had no idea how nerdy Portland was until I got here. And it was a nice surprise. So I just took advantage of that for a while.
Yeah. I mean, was this something, I'm assuming that it's something that you had an interest in since childhood, like comics and superheroes, those types of things, or no?
Actually, no. I mean, like, I've always dabbled in comics. Like, my older brother collected comics. And sure, I bought some, like, out of the quarter bins, you know, as a kid. But, like, as an adult is when I got into comics.
Mm-hmm. What was your gateway comic? Like, what brought you in?
Like, okay, so when I used to read just the cheap stuff, it was any and everything that I could afford. But when I really got into comics... at this place called Brainstorm Comics back in Chicago. It would have to be a lot of Image works. There was specific, or like Dark Horse stuff or Vertigo. Specifically, there's one comic called Why the Last Man. And once I picked that up, I understood that comics were not just superheroes. And I was floored. Because Why the Last Man, the whole premise was all of the men in the world had died. Except for one, but all of the women were still alive.
Whoa.
Yes. And so it was about this one man's journey trying to travel across the United States to try to find his girlfriend who was on vacation when all of this went down.
I'm okay. What is this called?
Why the Last Man.
Why the Last Man. I'm writing this down.
Yeah. And so, like, that was what really sparked my interest in comics. Now, again, I had no idea that Portland was a nerdy comic town. So when I got here, the only thing that I thought of besides looking for work was like, oh, well, maybe I can find a comic shop so that I could buy some comics instead of just always getting them from the library. And this leads directly into this career change.
Okay. Yeah.
Mandy and I looked up comic shops around town just to see, you know, what was available. And we found Things from Another World over on Sandy. And we went over there and just started, you know, shopping around. And the store clerk there, who is now my friend Scotty, didn't let us walk away with just a couple of comics. He said, hey, by the way, we host events. We host geek trivia. You should come to that if you're looking for stuff to do around town. And we've got a book signing coming up with, it was Zach Whedon, Joss Whedon's little brother. Because he had just released the Serenity Shepherd book story. And okay. Or Firefly Shepherd book story, sorry. And so we went to the signing and it was great. I got to meet a ton of new nerds, found out that like nerd things happen here, and eventually met the person who would later become my boss because we hit it off so well during that initial conversation that he just kept inviting me to other things. And I showed up for a couple more weeks. And at some point he was just like, hey, are you working right now? And I was like, no, I'm not. He's like, I think
matter of fact.
Yeah. he said, I think you would be a great store manager. And I think so too. let's do it.
By George, I think you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and honestly, I didn't have a ton of retail experience. I had the loss prevention experience and management experience. Like, I did dabble in retail previously in the past, but that wasn't important enough to mention. But that was literally just me making schedules, you know.
Okay.
I didn't know anything about, like, retail. And so he invited me to come in for this position, and he wanted to hire me as a store manager right off. But because of my lack of experience in this, I told him, no, you need to start me as a store clerk and let me work my way up for a couple of months. Because if I'm going to manage anyone, I need to know what I'm going to have to ask them to do and if it's actually a possibility. And so I did.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Again, an example of your leadership qualities, right?
I try. Just, you know, honestly, I think it only comes because I have had so much bad leadership that I'd never wanted to be that person.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I took the job and I worked my way up to manager within like 2 months. And then did that for about a year or so until I became a regional manager or district manager because I then took on a second store.
Okay.
Things from Another World actually has 3 stores in the Portland area.
Do they have stores outside of Portland?
They do. They have one in California at Universal City Walk.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I became like the district manager and was now managing a bigger staff, 2 store and stuff like that. And that drove me insane, but I did it anyway for years. And then... There were a lot of changes that happened within the company during this time I'm describing now. Let me jump back and explain as well that Things from Another World is also the sister company of Dark Horse Comics, the publisher.
Right.
And so the work I was doing there was also with them a bit. Like, obviously, I wasn't creating books, but I did have to work with them a lot. And because I got to know a lot of the Dark Horse staff, I was invited to do a lot of consulting for them, mainly because I proved to them that I had my ear to the ground. You know, what's hot? Mm-hmm. I was a great salesman. I knew what the community wanted. I knew, even outside of Portland, like, I would study what the trends were, what's selling, why it's selling, and why it makes people happy, things of that nature. Again, it was more about the psychology of people than just selling books. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so...
I want to give you, like, a scholarship for, for, like, human analysis, right? Like, if I was loaded, right? Like, I'd be like, Sean, here's the deal. I mean, because clearly this is something that has been a repeated pattern in your work history. And it's something that you have enough personal interest in that you take the time and you discover and learn and dig. So you understand the patterns of human behavior. And I find that really cool that you independently take that upon yourself, even in an industry. I mean, retail, I gotta be honest, I've worked retail jobs, man. I'm not paying attention to someone's human psychology. I'm like, all right, sure, yeah, you like the glitter, let's go with the glitter, you know, like, I
yeah
no, but I think that's valuable.
I guess it helps that I really dig customer service too. I really dig mm-hmm. that human connection and aspect, you know, because one, that's how I made a ton of friends. I want to meet, I want to have genuine interactions, and to be honest, yes, I also want to sell you things, but I want to sell you things that you will appreciate, love, then we can talk about later, and then you come back for more. And now we've, like, also taken steps to further our friendship and our bond. Yes.
Yep.
But I take those same skills and incorporate it to every aspect of business that I can, whether it's selling somebody something in the store, or whether I had to attend a management meeting or had to work, talk to purchasing or anything like that. So basically, what I did with my time there was go to every department, learn what it takes to do their jobs, not try to do their jobs. I'm not trying to take it over or like infiltrate their department, but I want to know how they do things, why they do things, because in the end, it will make me do my job better. Because if I am demanding of any other department, I want to know what I'm asking them for, and then know that I can provide it down the chain to the other people that, you know, end up being in need.
Right. Some justification and kind of logical. Right.
Right. And so I just became more and more involved in the company outside of the store. So at some point, I just kind of pushed. I'm not going to lie and say that they were very open to just saying like, well, we need to have you involved in these other things. I pretty much demanded it. because I didn't, I mean, you know, I was getting older and I didn't want to be on my feet all day for one. And while I'm great at sales, that's not all I felt that I was great at. And so I wanted to step up and do more. And so I did. And this is like years into this job. I am now the regional manager and I'm in charge of all three stores. But now I'm also working directly with purchasing department and marketing and a whole bunch of other things. One of the things you have to understand about nerd industries or nerd businesses is that pop culture and oftentimes has the needs of big business, but does not have the budget or staff to to really meet that. And so what happens is that everybody in a position is actually working 2 to 3. Mm-hmm. And the whole thing about working in these industries is that you spend the first couple of years just being excited that you're working in it, that you don't realize how overworked you are and how miserable you're making yourself. It's great being a nerd and it's great getting paid, but like you're still a human being. And you're
surrounded by.
Right.
Yeah.
And honestly, a lot of these companies, and I'm not talking trash about this one in particular, I'll get to that. they thrive on the fact that you're excited to work there. And so people in this, in that industry can be underpaid and overworked. And there's like no promotions. There's no room for growth in some cases. And
drinking the juice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Drinking the juice. And, and I went through that for a long time. And, I think I was at that company. What year is it again? It's 2020, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I worked at TFOS/Dark Horse from 2011 to 2018. They burned me out a little bit and I did not really care for the industry for a moment. It was hard to enjoy it because of everything I experienced working at this company. And this is the part where I meant, you know, where I said I would mention some things. When I finally realized what I had dedicated myself to, I sought freedom. I had to get out of there, and I realized how miserable I was working in this industry. And I quit. You know, because there Good were for actually, you. Yeah. In that particular company, unfortunately, I did have to deal with some racism. Mm-hmm. And just some outright verbal abuse at times. I was embarrassed on several occasions in front of people publicly. You know, there was one boss in particular who just was kind of a tyrant. And I thought for years that it was just me not doing things properly. And so I took the blame and then just kept trying to work harder and smarter and different and like trying to grow it so that I wouldn't get in trouble. And but when I finally accepted that it wasn't me and it wasn't that I was being taken advantage of to some extent, I quit, like I said. And I just took some time away.
Yeah.
And to realize how traumatized I actually was. I did not know right away. In fact, I did not know for 2 years until I did a lot of my own soul searching and found out that, yeah, I had put myself through this situation that caused me a lot of harm mentally and in some cases physically. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I did quit, and I made some smart decisions to prepare myself to be without a career yet again.
Good.
I had some money saved. I made some pretty decent exit deals because I had knowledge that that company still needed and I wanted money for it. So I made some exit deals and decided to start my own business. And that brings us all the way to today, really, because Strange Solutions Marketing and Consulting was spawned from me not wanting to use my knowledge anymore for somebody else who was underpaying me for it and overworking me for it.
Right. Yeah.
And so I decided, why don't I just do this for myself? I just spent the last few years building up this network full of nerds. I should do something with that. People are always coming to me for advice. I have studied this industry inside and out. This might be something I can get paid for.
Right.
And so, fairly. Yeah, fairly, yes. Because I can set my own wage. And so I did. And, you know, it was very slow going. So, you know, I took on a day job at the same time, working in a video game company.
I'd like to point out real quick, that's not uncommon. So anyone listening, I don't think this is spoken of very often with entrepreneurial endeavors, how many, if not most, people who pursue their own entrepreneurial, you know, whatever it is, venture, right, are often working at least one other job at the beginning.
Yes.
It is so rare. This Instagram picture perfect, I own a business and that's all I've got, right? And it pays all my bills. That's great. And if you've got it, hold on to that. You're doing something right. Good for you. But if you don't have it, it's okay. That doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I just want to point that out. And I'm really glad you mentioned, you know, having something else going at the same time. Because I think, I don't think everyone's willing to say it, to mention and talk about that.
No, I think you're right. And I think people always want that perception of like, you know, I'm doing so well at this thing that I took a risk at starting, that they're not willing to admit that like, it's hard and sometimes you're in trouble, you know?
Well, and let's be honest. I mean, I've owned a business, you own a business, right? Like you and I both know there are certain people that we don't want to work with, right? Yep. And as a business owner, I have the right to decline a client or to be my authentic self. So they might not want to work with me and that's okay, right? Whereas, you know, if I don't have a backup thing, especially at the beginning when I'm getting established, you feel like you have to take the client you wouldn't ordinarily take. You feel like you gotta bend over backwards, and there's just not good feelings, man. No, I don't like that.
No, and honestly, I think I am finally at a place now where I do get to deny a client, and because I can, and I feel so much better about that because, you know.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just not a good fit, right? I know it, they know it, but somehow you're trying to make it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, and honestly, I have been in a position where I have been like, you know, I can pay electricity bills later. I'm definitely not working with this dude. So, but I'm not doing that.
You got a fireplace, we're good. Yeah.
But yeah, I took this day job at a video game company, just doing online customer service for them, just answering emails or tickets about questions or complaints that players had in the game. And so at the same time I started that, I started sharing solutions and landed my first client within a month or two, and took on marketing for them and social media and all sorts of things. And I did that for like months, until I realized that now I was responsible for overworking myself.
Yes.
Yeah. And so, I started thinking about how I could fix this so that I could retain some sanity. And I decided less money okay for me, and I needed to expand the business and get more staff and people in. So I reached out to people, again, in the network that I spent years building to become partners. And in doing so, allowed us to become better organized and take on other clients. Because I just didn't have the bandwidth to even grow at that point just by myself. And so, yeah, I brought in a social media coordinator. I brought in a business manager. I brought in a PR person. I brought in a writer. And then, you know, subcontracted a sensitivity reader and what, just anything that I thought that we might need.
Right.
And I let it kind of run from there. And at the same time, I'm still working this day job. So, and this is the part that I did not tell you beforehand, and it might blow your mind. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So
I'm seated and ready.
Okay. So Strange Solutions is still a thing and going. The pandemic hit us hard. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because if our clients aren't making any money, they can't keep afford to pay us.
Right.
And so that's where we're at today. However, everybody on my team, all my partners or anybody that works for me, all have other jobs. Every single one of us. Mm-hmm. We own this business together now, but we all work elsewhere. And because that is what this year has brought to us, and it's out of necessity. Meanwhile, in my current day job, I have now been there 2 years and I took a promotion in July.
This is awesome. Yeah.
Sorry.
It showed up for you.
It did.
Like, that's awesome.
And honestly, you know what? You know what, actually, I cannot tell you how happy I am. And it's so weird. I went from working at a company that I felt abused me to a company that does nothing but care about me. The company I work for now, which I'm not going to say their name, because this is a video game company, and I do not want these players to find me. But they do nothing but care about me, and they have some of the highest standards when it comes to caring about their employees that I've ever seen in my entire life, to the point where I am happy to take this promotion and work hard for them and still try to run my company.
Yeah.
And in fact, if we ever get out of this pandemic and we can return to like some form of normal business, I'm perfectly happy letting my partners and some of the other people take the reins a little bit more, and for whoever needs it, maintain whatever funds we make from those jobs. Because now I don't want to quit. I honestly can see myself staying at this job in its current format the way it is now. And when I say they care about people, they respected every single employee throughout COVID, throughout the election. They care about me as an individual and as a minority.
Mm-hmm.
They check on me inside and outside of work.
Exactly. This is heartwarming. Yeah.
And even their business practices, they are trying to actually grow in the most professional, but also human way.
Right.
You know, it's not about just money for them. And I think what appeals to me most is that, like I kept mentioning throughout my different career jumps, they care about their customers and they let us work that way so that we can do so too. We're never pushed to just get the dollar. We get the dollar responsibly.
I mean, I feel like conscious business practices are a hot topic, especially now. I mean, this, who knows when we're going to air your episode here. So this is like November 14th of 2020. We're at the end of November, past the election. And I mean, even myself, right? I work with people. I help write them resumes and do some career coaching with people. And I'm noticing job titles that I've never seen before that reflect a different consciousness about how businesses run, how businesses are also impacting others. I just did, let's see, hold on, I got one right here. Working with someone who's applying for this job right here. I've got like it printed out for listeners, and it's responsible materials analyst for VF Corp, which is like North Face, Timberland,
right?
You know, what have you. And this job description is basically someone is going to spend a significant amount of time tracing how materials are sourced, how labor practices are used when they receive those materials. Like, they're tracking this at a very different level. And I think this is pretty amazing and a reflection of something you're describing right now, right? Is you have this employer who cares on a different level, right? Yeah. And I think that's promising. I'm curious to see, you know, little kids right now, what types of workplace environments they'll experience, right? Because I don't think it will be like it's been in recent years, or I hope it won't.
No, exactly.
So, Sean.
Yes.
How do listeners find you? Like, not your house. I'm saying, like...
Why? Is somebody looking for me? What do you know?
So I've been a PI. No.
You can find me. We have a website for Strange Solutions Marketing Consulting. You can just Google search that and we'll pop right up. We also have a Facebook presence. We have a Facebook page you can follow. We do post events there for some of our clients, so it's a good source for what's going on in Portland. And sometimes we cover other states too, depending on how large the event is, or the countries as well. You can find us there. I am on Twitter. Under Serious Black, and that is CERIUSBLAQ. You can follow me on Twitter for updates on what I'm doing about around town, whether it be personal or professional. I use it for both just because they intertwine so much. And you can find me on Facebook. I'm not saying I'll accept your friendship, but message me and we'll see. But most importantly, if you need something from Strange Solutions, you can always send me a detailed email at SeanW@strange-solutions.com, and I'd be happy to converse with you on your project or your idea and see what kind of ground it can take. So,
Sean, I've had a lot of changes and lots of different pivots throughout your career. What would you say was your most challenging career pivot?
The most challenging career pivot would have to be my most recent one, because it took a lot of strength, courage, and I was terrified to leave a position because I did not understand, or I was fearful of what my place would be in the community after I left the big publishing company.
Sure.
I was so abused that I had lost my sense of worth. And so I didn't know whether I was actually a part of the community without working there, necessary for the community, or wanted in it. But I decided that it didn't matter because I wasn't happy anyway. And I left anyway. And the first year after I left was full of anxiety, to be honest, because like I said, I didn't know where I belonged. And so I kept going out into the community, but I think I overreacted in some cases, overextended in some cases, and just overcompensated a lot, trying to make sure that I was still important enough to be here or that I've earned my standing. When ultimately it turned out it wasn't necessary. Leaving that company just proved to be something I did and it did not define me. So that I would say that was the hardest part, and I'm still working on it because I have some formats of PTSD from that. To the point where the new career that I'm at now, they have proven time and time again that I am in no harm, but I still think I am sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I have to remind myself. So, yeah.
I mean, I would venture to say that what you're sharing right now can feel so relatable to so many people in a variety of scenarios. I'm not trying to belittle your scenario. I recognize this is tough beans. It's not fun stuff to go through.
Yeah.
But I love that you're in an environment that's supportive and there for you and helping you build a safe space at work. And it sounds like probably outside of work as well, which is really great.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm sure there are others that are listening who've had similar experiences, be it through work or personal relationships or what have you, and haven't been as fortunate to have the community that it sounds like you're currently in.
Exactly.
All right. I want to give a big, big thank you to Sean for sharing his story. He's obviously seen a lot of things, done a lot of things, has really expanded into a large range of markets, and it sounds like you're in a great place. I'm really happy to hear that for you, Sean. We are over here cheering you and the Strange Solutions team on. Guys, check them out. And check out Sean. He's active on social media. He did share some info with us. So, yeah, take a look. I will make sure to include his Twitter handle and the Strange Solutions website in the description of today's episode. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We will be back very soon with another interview with a amazing career pivoter. But until then, keep your eyes peeled. We are on all the social medias doing the things and just trying to connect with you. So please share our podcast with others. Tell your friends. Let me know if there's anyone you would like me to interview. You can contact me through the PivotMastersPodcast.com website, and I will be sure to follow up with you. You guys have a great day. Thanks so much for stopping by. We'll be back again soon.